You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome to Decoding 2019, where we make sense of the Indian elections. There was a time when Uttar Pradesh and Bihar, the two largest states as far as Lok Sabha elections were concerned, cornered 139 seats. That's more than a quarter of the strength of the Lok Sabha. After the bifurcation of both the states, UP remains the largest state, whereas the mantle of the second largest state has gone to Maharashtra with 48 seats. In every national election, these two states, along with the other large states such as West Bengal, Bihar and Tamil Nadu, play important roles. All of these states also happen to have strong regional parties, and the result often depends on the electoral arrangements that the national parties reach with them. As far as Lok Sabha 2019 is concerned, the lines are clearly drawn in most of these states. In Uttar Pradesh, Mayawati's Bahujan Samaj Party and Akhilesh Yadav's Samajwadi Party got together for the March 2018 by-elections and have continued the arrangement. In West Bengal, Mamata Banerjee's Trinamool Congress is about the only large player and is going it alone, trusting its strength in the state. Bihar is seeing the continuing partnership of the BJP and Nitish Kumar's Janata Dal United, that is JDU, with the BJP surprisingly accommodating the JDU to a much greater extent than anyone could have imagined. In Tamil Nadu, the focus is again on the two large regional parties, the Dravida Munnetra Kazhagam and the All India Anna Dravida Munnetra Kazhagam, DMK and AIADMK, and we have the Congress partnering with the DMK and the BJP with the AIADMK. We've been making sense of battleground states on these podcasts. We've spoken about West Bengal, the bronze medalist as far as Lok Sabha seats are concerned. We've also spoken about Uttar Pradesh, that is the gold medalist. Sandwiched between these two in the constituency race is Maharashtra. And that is what the spotlight will be on today's episode of Decoding 2019 Battleground States. We'll be taking a look at Maharashtra and what it has on offer in the Lok Sabha elections 2019. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control.
The Deep Dive podcast series, Decoding 2019, State of the Election, Maharashtra Edition.
For the elections of 2004 and 2009, in Maharashtra, the Congress-NCP coalition had the upper hand. In the Modi wave of 2014, the situation was reversed, with the BJP getting 41 out of the 48 seats. So what are we likely to see happening in Maharashtra this time around? What are the issues and what is the general mood? What is happening with the parties and, more importantly, partnerships? The alliances in Maharashtra, though along expected lines, have had interesting short histories that led to the final resolution just before the elections were announced. The two strong regional parties in the state are the Shiv Sena and the Nationalist Congress Party, which have traditionally aligned with the BJP and the Congress respectively. That is Shiv Sena with the BJP and the NCP with the Congress. The Shiv Sena, which was founded by Bal Thackeray on the back of a movement to protect the interests of the locals, had an anti-migrant approach that resulted in harassment of and attacks on migrant South Indians. This has been documented by various news sources. A few years later, the party moved from that plank to that of Hindutva, allied with the strident Maratha pride and a mix of traditional religious and nationalist values. The Shiv Sena first allied with the BJP in 1989, and since then the two parties have been allies in elections to both the Maharashtra Assembly and the Lok Sabha, whether in government or in opposition. The Assembly elections in 2014 saw the first sign of fissures when they could not agree on seat sharing and ended up competing against each other. After the BJP formed the government, they managed to get the Shiv Sena to move from being the opposition to becoming a part of the government. Ayo, Indian politics. For the Lok Sabha earlier, they had fought together, but the assembly election unease endured and the Shiv Sena ended up making jibes at the BJP and Narendra Modi continually. Before the alliance was announced a few days ago for the 2019 polls, the Shiv Sena had been going at the BJP and Modi, it seemed, with a vengeance. But the lack of an aggressive retort from the BJP indicated that this was possibly muscle flexing by the Shiv Sena for a favourable deal, and that is exactly what it turned out to be in the end. Anyway, the posturing doesn't seem to have paid off, with Amit Shah striking a hard bargain, and the Sena probably realized that it doesn't have a way out, with going it alone not being a viable option. The two parties have agreed to a seat sharing of 23 for the Sena and 25 for the BJP for the Lok Sabha elections. 23 plus 25, 48. Much more galling for the Sena probably is the fact that it ended up agreeing to an equal seat share for the assembly elections, which are slated for a few months later. The Shiv Sena has come out of the deal looking a bit sullen, not having got what they were angling for, which was a bigger piece of the pie in Maharashtra, where it has traditionally seen itself as the senior party. Some of the Kada apparently are unhappy about it, comparing it to a bad marriage where divorce is not an option. While the BJP and the Shiv Sena seem to have solved their problems in time for the elections, what magic that is. In the case of the NCP and the Congress, there have been unforeseen difficulties. Sure, both the parties have reached an understanding and are fighting the polls together, but a number of leaders of the party have walked away to join the BJP ahead of seat distribution. For the Congress, the biggest embarrassment has come in the form of Sujay Vikhe Patil, the son of the leader of the opposition in the Assembly, joining the BJP in March. In addition, NCP chief Sharad Pawar, one of the biggest leaders and political forces in the state, has decided not to contest this year, saying he did not want three people from his family to contest. Pawar will continue to hold his Rajya Sabha seat till the term ends. His place will be taken by his grandnephew and Ajit Pawar's son, Parth, though from a different constituency. Sharad Pawar has dismissed suggestions that this shows his tentativeness about a good showing. He had initially planned to contest from Madha, which will now go to senior leader Vijay Singh Mohite Patil, who had won, incidentally, from there last time by a margin of over 2 lakh votes, or Vijay Singh Patil's son. There is also the suggestion that Pawar stepped back, perhaps practically and prudently, in the face of resentment from Mohite Patil's supporters in the sugar belt of Sholapur. So what is the situation like? Well, the main issues in the state continue to be jobs and agrarian crisis, like in the rest of the country. In parts of Maharashtra, there is also the issue of drought, which has affected not just the farmlands, but the cities as well. Though a water problem should more affect the assembly elections, the fact that both central and state elections come so close to each other could mean that the sentiment of one could reflect in the other. Moreover, the same party is in power in both cases. The farmer issue and the drought mean that the sugarcane farmers are likely to go with the NCP, or the UPA. In this case, the NCP has traditionally been a strong force in western Maharashtra, which is the sugar belt. The BJP has been trying to break into this area, that is western Maharashtra, and its success in 2014 was also because it had on its side Raju Shetty, leader of the Swabhimani Shetkari Sanghatan. However, this time, Raju Shetty has decided to ally with the UPA, which gives them a fillip in the region. Shetty's move also indicates the overall mood of the sugarcane farmers. However, what could spoil it for the UPA in Sholapur is the realignment of caste equations. Sholapur is a reserved constituency, and the UPA has fielded senior Congress leader Sushil Kumar Shinde. The potential problem this time around is the presence of Prakash Ambedkar in the fray. Ambedkar's party, the Bahujan Vanchit Aghadi, is expected to take Dalit and minority votes away from the Congress in this reserved constituency, and the BJP is banking on Ambedkar's ability to change the equation here. In the last few years, the ground has also shifted in Maharashtra. The BJP has always been a party of urban areas and the middle class, while the Congress's traditional strength has been its appeal among the rural and farming communities and among the minorities and the disadvantaged. However, this seems to have changed somewhat. In 2014, for example, the BJP did better than ever before in the UPA strongholds, while the showing of the Congress-NCP combine was better than expected in some of the BJP's well-tested constituencies. Will the equation perhaps be reset this time? Well, time will tell. Another thing to reconsider is the Congress's election manifesto, which has shaken things up a little. The manifesto definitely seems to return to the party some of its space that it had ceded to the opposition over the last 5 or so years. As we've discussed before in another podcast, the Congress Party manifesto has some clear messages, especially for the disadvantaged, promising a robust universal basic income, that is the Nyay scheme, about which I've spoken at length, so do listen to that podcast. It also has clear messages on farm loan waivers, increased allocations for education and health, that is 3 and 6% respectively of the GDP, and a streamlined GST system. The important points seem to have been thought out to blunt the BJP narrative as far as the social agenda is concerned. While some of the details are unclear or unrealistic, the BJP's initial response, at least, has been tangential at best, going back to the issues of patriotism, national security, and the majoritarian narrative, rather than a rigorous examination of the manifesto. What we've heard from Jaitley is, of course, that this is dangerous and unimplementable. I think Rijiku went on to say that this was anti-national, which is a sentiment a lot of the BJP politicians have expressed. They've also expressed, of course, reservations about the Armed Forces Special Powers Act and what the Congress hopes to do with the review of that act. So, at best, the response from the BJP when it comes to the manifesto has been tangential. Whether this approach will play dividend or not has to be seen. But what is clear here is the two almost parallel narratives that the two fronts have in Maharashtra. So how could the situation in Maharashtra be read? If you look at the vote share, the heavy tilt in the NDA's favour in 2014 becomes evident. The BJP Sena had about 48% to the Congress NCP's 34%, a huge difference of 14 percentage points. This gave the NDA a huge seat advantage in 2014 of 41 versus 6. This time, it all depends on the swing factor. How disaffected are the people of Maharashtra with their current position vis-a-vis their expectation post-2014? How much is the perceived gulf between promise and delivery? Or are they dissatisfied at all? How much are the issues of farmer distress and unemployment going to impact voter behavior? Are demonetization and the clumsy GST implementation still relevant? What will be the extent of the influence of leaders crossing over to the other side? What does the ultra-nationalistic slant of the BJP mean as far as Maharashtra is concerned? Will the incident-based issue of national security trump the more immediately pertinent and long-lasting one of employment? Does the Balakot incident have legs? According to most sources, it doesn't. Down south, Hindutva and nationalism are not headlined as much as they are in the north. Maharashtra falls somewhere in the middle. Also, Maharashtra is a good mix of urban and rural areas, of industry and farming. So this election's big two of agrarian crisis and unemployment are likely to be equally important. In many ways, Maharashtra could truly reflect what the concerns of the people are across the country. Both sides have expressed confidence over their performance in the coming election in Maharashtra. The NDA has said that they will improve their performance from 2014, which is not a statement they have made in the states that they swept. In turn, the UPA has said it is certain of a massive bounce back. Of course, that could all be taken as talk as usual, and only one side could be right at best. Both cannot be right, while both could be wrong.
The Deep Dive podcast series, Decoding 2019, State of the Election, Maharashtra Edition.
In Maharashtra, polling is scheduled to be held in four phases in different parts of the state. The dates are the 11th of April, that's almost upon us, 18th of April, 23rd and 29th of April. Counting, as it is in the rest of the country, will be on the 23rd of May. This time too, it is going to be an extremely interesting election, and we will know by the 23rd of May which issues affected Maharashtrians more and which did not. And finally, as I always insist, the only duty we have is to vote. So if you are of age to vote, why don't you please check if you're on the register, find out where your booth is, and please go vote. As I've always said, ignore the drama around you. Do not listen to the political debates. I'm saying this as I'm doing a podcast on the battleground states. Do not actually heed what political commentators are saying on either side. Listen to what the parties have to say in their manifesto. Find out whether or not your MP in your current constituency has done work that you appreciate. Find out if there is something lacking and if there is something that you like. And then find out which of the parties is likely to deliver it. And vote for that party. But most importantly, vote. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener, a smarter investor, and the smartest voter.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.